Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oh, it is time for this week's Visiting Critic. Every Friday we get a non-professional reviewer to experience something that they would never consider doing and rate it for our listeners. We're delighted to welcome the British Ambassador to Ireland, Mr. Paul Johnston, who we sent out to try out the increasingly popular hobby of rug tufting. Ambassador Paul, Your Excellency, all of the protocols adhered to, welcome to studio.
Thank you very much, Mr. Callan.
Now, this was really actually difficult to find something for you that's outside of your comfort zone, because as an ambassador, you're basically forced to watch everything.
Exactly. You have no comfort zone, or you have an enormous comfort zone, probably. Yeah.
But I've come to know you a little bit, and the span of your interests is very wide anyway, isn't it? Sport, arts, bit of hill walking. You kind of do everything, don't you? TV shows, dancing even?
I try to do a lot of things, and it's part of the job, and it's one of the things I most love about Ireland and throwing myself into things. So when your people got in touch, it was quite a sort of, it was a good challenge to try and find something. I could have pretended my comfort zone was very narrow and say, you know, I'd really enjoy going to see a film. But in the end, having experimented with axe throwing, which I thought in the end would probably be more risky to me and my immediate neighbours than anything else, we went for rug tufting.
Yes.
Which was fantastic.
It's literally kind of making rugs. And
it is making rugs. You go into this very nice little studio, and my rug tufting mentor had very kindly drawn me an illustration of what I was going to tuft, which is my favourite animal, the giraffe.
An illustration of your choice.
Exactly.
Okay.
And she drew it very nicely. So that was the first most difficult bit done. And then you're handed this thing, which is like a cross between an old-fashioned sewing machine and a sort of... machine gun, and you have to hold it very carefully, like so, put up as like so, pose out of a Scarface or something, and it feeds through this coloured wool onto the back of your illustration, and you have to go straight up and down. It's a bit like ploughing. I sort of channeled my inner President Higgins at the ploughing championships, and you have to get exactly the right pressure on the canvas if you want your wool to go in very neatly.
Right.
Being a bit of a nerd, I focused very hard on having very neat lines of wool.
Did you? Okay.
To create my beautifully tufted rug.
Why a giraffe then? Was it your
just
choice?
It's his favorite, just a favorite animal, always has been, and for both my wife and me. So I thought it would be a nice little thing to produce. It's a very sort of gentle illustration. It's a giraffe with some nice little, presumably eucalyptus leaves, against a pale blue sky. And so I filled in the different giraffe colours, and I gave it nice eyes and sort of little eyelashes and pointy ears.
Very colourful, lots of primary colours.
Oh yes, lots of soft colours actually, sort of beiges and browns and then some nice blue and green.
Where did you actually do it? It's Tufting Dublin, they call it.
It is, which is in Smithfield, and it's a little gallery opened only a few months ago. It does pottery classes as well, so they were enticing me at the end. It might be another opportunity for your unconventional critic slot. Send off the new Taoiseach or Tánaiste to cast a few pottery mugs. But it's a nice little area, and it was quite in a way curious, sort of way therapeutic. I'd come from hosting a sort of business lunch, and I was going to do something else later in the day. Okay. So actually, to sit with this little sort of sewing machine, machine gun, making my giraffe rug was quite a sort of therapeutic hour in the afternoon.
It was therapeutic because I'd imagine with the gun sounds
and
everybody else around you.
Quite hard.
Okay.
And I was the only person doing it in the so I had the place to myself, which is, they usually do bigger classes, but I couldn't get to an evening workshop, so they very kindly gave me an hour's intensive tufting on my own in the afternoon.
To the relief of your security team, nobody else with
these
sewing guns.
My very nice guard of protection officer took a few photographs of the event, which probably one of the more unusual things. It's probably what they don't teach you at Garda Training College. You may need to photograph an ambassador as he tufts his rug, but there we were.
It was a success. It came out on the right.
It came out rather well. It came out rather well.
What happens to the rug? Do you still have it in your?
So it's going to be glued and fitted, and I think it's only. So probably sort of 75 centimetres by 75 centimetres. So it might be the start of something bigger.
Okay.
It could be a retirement project. Okay. You know, I'll have a sort of biotechnology of tufted drugs. Every animal in the animal kingdom will have its own Johnston tufted tile.
The Johnston tapestry.
That's right, exactly.
Has begun. Well, thank you very much for doing that. Again,
it was great fun.
Probably wasn't in the plans when you arrived here.
Wasn't my 90-day plan for 2025, but it's retrofitted now.
And you're here an unusually long time for an ambassador to Ireland.
I think by the end, by the time I do my 5 years in September, I think that will have been the longest of the, I think, 15 or so ambassadors who've come before me. I will be probably the longest serving.
The longest serving ever. Nice. And the reason for that?
The reason for that was it's partly events and partly sort of procedure, in that the Foreign Office gives you a sort of 4 year posting, but they introduced a few years ago a provision whereby you could apply to get a fifth year. And I was enjoying Ireland so much, and I'd lost, in a sense, quote unquote, the first 18 months or so to the pandemic, because I arrived in September 2020. Yeah. That I realised that coming towards what would have been the end of the fourth year in the summer of 2024, that I realised the year before that we'd probably have, almost certainly have, elections in both Ireland and Britain mm-hmm. in that period. And given there was the prospect of changes of government in either or both countries, I made the case to my sort of hierarchy that in terms of continuity, it would be a good thing to have the ambassador in place through the elections. The fact that I was really enjoying the job was completely incidental, but I made the business case for staying on and doing a fifth year, and that was accepted. So I was delighted by that.
Which means that you were here to see quite significant changes in
yeah, exactly. So a big change in 2024 as the British government changed. Obviously, less of a change here with a government taking office next week, which will be quite similar to the one that was outgoing. But I think, therefore, a good mixture of continuity and change in the relationship overall. And a really interesting time in the relationship and in both countries.
Your job is a non-political one, and you're Correct. Not politically appointed. You're part of the permanent civil service.
Exactly.
So is your job become more difficult when there are kind of political tensions, as there were in the Johnson, the Boris Johnson government versus Ireland at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing in that the job is definitely more challenging and more complicated when the relationships between the governments are difficult. I remember hosting, I think you were probably there, the Queen's birthday party, this of our big annual day reception in June of 2022, when the then government had just published a very controversial piece of legislation on Northern Ireland to unpick the agreement with the European Union. And Micheál Martin very kindly came to the reception, and he made a very nice speech about the relationship with Britain and the royal family and all the rest of it. But he said relations between the two governments were at an all-time low, which was a difficult backdrop for the event and for the first of 18 months, 2 years of my time here. But it requires you just to sort of be very professional, think hard about how to do the job, try and do a range of wider things, whether it's culture, sport, history, business, communications, to sort of balance some of the more difficult bits at the heart of the relationship. But as the relationship improves, the job evolves and, things get better. And there's no doubt that the relationship between the two governments, the two countries, is now significantly better than it was, a few years back. And that process of improvement began under the previous British government and has certainly, I think, accelerated under the current one.
And what essentially is your job in those situations when there are is your job to try and smooth things a little bit? Or
it's a couple of things. If you think of the job facing in two directions, facing back to your capital, in my case to London, it's about giving advice to ministers and the Prime Minister and senior officials on that both the sort of the policy towards Ireland, although that's obviously ultimately their choice because they're the elected government, but then more it's on how to sort of develop the message. So are you putting the emphasis on the right aspects? Are you talking to the right people? And obviously it's my job and my team's job here to try and deliver the British message publicly and privately as carefully as possible and as effectively as possible. And then to report back to London on how it's going down and say, look, this message is landing very badly. We need to think about how we adjust this, or these are people that we need to talk to. So it's a bit like being a foreign correspondent, and it's also a bit like being a sort of, a messenger. Literally, an ambassador is a messenger.
And you have to stay very objective, don't you? Because no matter what the people have decided, is their government of
exactly.
Britain.
And I serve governments of all different types: Conservative, Labour, Conservative, Liberal coalitions. And there are times when you have personally differences with the policy of the government, but that goes with the territory. And it's your job to be professional and to explain and describe and defend the policy as well as possible, including up against people in your profession who give one a tough time. But that's that goes with the territory.
That's
and it's what you have to do. And it's a good professional challenge.
Do you love the job?
I do love the job. And, I've done it in various countries. I was ambassador to Sweden, did a couple of jobs in Brussels at NATO and the EU, and in New York at the UN. But I think this is definitely my favourite job, both because of the people and the country, but also because it's just such an inherently you know, complex and interesting relationship. And it's a relationship that really matters to both countries as well.
You must have learned a lot of new things about Ireland that you didn't know.
Yes, I did. And I think it's one of the big asymmetries in the relationship. When I was preparing for this job, I had a good Irish friend who was my counterpart in my last job in Brussels. And he said one of the big sort of imbalances in the relationship is that British people grow up knowing not nearly enough about Ireland, and Irish people probably grow up knowing in some ways too much about Britain. And I remember the excellent podcast series you did for the BBC. Was it Killing Elephants?
Killing Leprechauns.
Killing Leprechauns. I've got jungle animals on the mind, I suppose, because of the giraffe. But it was striking how much or how little well-educated British people of about our age knew about Ireland. And your series really brought that out. So yeah, I've learned stuff the whole time that I've been here and have been really interested to do so. And it's one of the great joys of the job that you're sort of paid to do something that professionally you would love to do anyway, which is go and talk to politicians and journalists and read history and explore a country. But it's trying to sort of get under the skin of another country in order that you can understand it and therefore fulfill your purpose of helping your country tell its story in another country and to help to build the relationship between the two countries, not just between the governments, but between university sectors, between business, people-to-people links are really important as well. So we've got a summit meeting coming up between the new Taoiseach and the Prime Minister in the UK in March. And the themes will include things like people-to-people links, education, culture, because it's not just about the foreign policy relationship or the business relationship, important though those are. It's a sort of, I think after the sort of the shock of Brexit, we're moving hopefully into a period when the British-Irish relationship becomes a bit more like a normal relationship, less right. one defined by crises and controversy.
So back to normality.
Back to something like, but a new normal, they might say in the advertising world, whatever that means.
Sure. One of the most fascinating aspects of your job, of any diplomat moving overseas, is that whoever the ambassador happens to be married to has to come with them. Often. And then they essentially, I call your wife Nicola the co-ambassador because that's, you know, she's always there working.
Yeah, she does a fantastic job. And it's a curious thing. In many ways, the diplomatic profession still has hangovers from a bygone age. So when I joined the Foreign Office 30 years ago, they called the ambassador spouse, and it was usually a wife because senior diplomats were typically men at the time. Mm-hmm. They called them the trailing spouse, which is a terribly sort of offensive term.
Yeah.
And
it
now.
Certainly didn't mean a husband, did
it? No. Things have changed a lot in that in many cases, both partners will work. Some partners will stay at home looking after the children or will do their own job. My wife does an amazing job, both hosting events with me at the residence, thinking about guest lists, thinking about how we best present the event to our guests. And she, just as much as me, has sort of fallen in love with Ireland. We've really enjoyed going around the country. And but she's made a big sacrifice because she was a lawyer and then a law lecturer,
yeah.
a head of corporate fundraising. So to sort of give that up to trot around the world with me and moving house every sort of few years is a big sacrifice. But she's a brilliant person, as you know.
Good fun.
Good fun.
Handy to have a lawyer around anyway.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Keeps me out of trouble.
One of the texts have come in, says, surely he's the ambassador for Scotland.
Ah, well, that's a,
and there
that's
we come
a good point.
To.
It's I once did a seminar at the Royal Irish Academy, which was sort of juxtaposing the idea that Ireland had modernised and changed a lot in the last 20 or 30 years in terms of diversity, but still had some sort of old-fashioned hang-ups. And it was called, it's all right to be anything in Ireland now as long as you're not British. Okay. And I sort of qualified by that by saying, A, that in even in difficult times in the relationship, I'd always been met with a lot of warmth and affection. But I do think maybe the Scottishness and the Scottish accent helps a little bit.
Really? There are differences in how we treat Scots versus the English.
I saw a map on the internet the other day, and conscious of the daytime audience, I won't say literally what it said, but it had most of Europe and it had Scotland. And for most of Europe and Scotland, it said great bunch of lads. But over England and Wales, it says something slightly different. And I won't say exactly what it was, but it wasn't quite as popular.
It was unpleasant.
It wasn't unpleasant. It was just a bit sort of bit different, I would say.
Cruel to include Wales.
Well,
I think the Welsh to an Irish psyche are kind of still a bit of a mystery to us.
I think that's probably right, actually. I remember growing up in the south of Scotland, just south of Edinburgh, every year for the, as it was then, the Five Nations rugby tournament. The visitors we always loved coming to sort of stay in our local bed and breakfasts and hotels were the visitors from Ireland and the visitors from Wales. So there was this sort of Celtic connectivity, I think, between between the countries, not least in their perhaps their perceptions of England.
Maybe we are not ready to forgive them for Holyhead.
That's all getting sorted now. That's all.
It is. Even the diplomacy has to be in those
for the relationship. It's all going to be fine.
So you are going to depart around September, but you've travelled to most of the counties of the 26.
I think 23 out of 26, and a number of the counties in Northern Ireland as well. So in our box ticking way, we want to get them all done by the time we finish the job in September.
Oh, you can go up north as well, even though you're
definitely.
What three counties are missing of the?
So I'm almost certainly going to get this wrong, but I think it's Meath, and it's maybe Longford and Leitrim. I think.
Oh well, you have no problem finding. Like you go to Centre Parks. And
love to go to Centre Parks.
Meath is almost unavoidable. The Hill of Tara, I suppose.
Yes, no, so we must. We've been to Westmeath, but we've not been to Meath, or at least we've not stayed in Meath, which is our criterion. It's not just sort of passing through. You have to sort of stay the night there. So any listeners in those counties who have ideas for things to do, please...
Contact the embassy.
Yes. Don't contact Oliver's office, but contact the embassy.
Well, I should say a lot of the travelling you've done has been on your own personal time on holidays.
It's been a mixture. We've enjoyed doing both. Obviously, you go to places and you visit sort of universities and research institutes, chambers of commerce. You go and see the local politicians. But it's nice just to sort of go. We love walking and we love sort of eating out and culture. So we enjoy just going places sort of privately too.
And now rug tufting.
Thank
you for throwing your hand at that. And if you want to try out rug tufting where Paul made his lovely giraffe, you can go to dublintufting.com. Ambassador Paul Johnston, have a lovely weekend.
Thanks so much, Oliver. Thank you.